Hi, I'm Zisi. I'm a student of Chassidus, aspiring to live a God-centered life, while also mothering, staying present, and holding on to creativity and drive. Each month, I'm exploring where these ideals meet through the lens of Hasidic thought. Let's probe the heights and return grounded as we navigate standing between earth and sky. This month, we're leading into the summer months, and during this time, we have the mourning period of the 3 weeks. It starts in middle of this month of Tammuz, on Shavuot Arba Tammuz, on the 17th of Tammuz. We enter into a period of mourning, commemorating first the breaching of the walls of Yerushalayim and then the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And this state of galus that began with this process is something that we're still experiencing on a very real level, and we are still living deeply entrenched in the galus and feeling the pain of galus. And it's hard to live in this space. It's hard to live in this space of pain, especially when it seems like there's no point to this. Like, how long is this going to last? We've been holding on to hope for so long. And at this point, holding on to that hope feels so vulnerable because our grandparents believed and our great-grandparents believed and our great-great-great-grandparents believed that this galus would be over soon, that we would be reaching the redemption on the other side. And as we're still standing here, it can lead to feelings of hopelessness and almost feel a little bit like we've been abandoned by Hashem, that He's gone into hiding and our relationship can feel very distant when we're not in the state of revelation, when we're in the state of darkness. So I wanted to explore a little bit this concept of galus. What is the purpose of this galus? And hopefully bring a little hope and shed a little light on the darkness of galus. And we're going to do that by going back in time to the first time the Jewish people were in exile, which is the exile of Mitzrayim. And Moshe Rabbeinu has been sent by Hashem to redeem the Jewish people from Mitzrayim. And he goes to Paro and he says, "Let my people go." And Paro obviously says no. And then Paro proceeds to actually enact new laws to make it even harder for the Jewish people. And it just becomes harder. Now they have to actually create the bricks, not use the bricks that are already made, etc., etc. And Moshe turns to Hashem at the end of Parshas Shemos, and he says, "Lam harios alam hazeh? Why are you doing such bad things to this people? Why are you being so harsh and so cruel to your nation? What is the point of this galus? Why are we here? It's only getting darker, and the people are feeling hopeless. The people are feeling lost. Why are you doing this to us?" And Hashem answers him in the following parsha, in the beginning of Parshas Va'era, by saying, "Ani Hashem, I am God. Va'era el Avraham, el Yitzchak ve'el Yaakov. I appeared to Avraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov, Bekel Shakai, with the name Shin Dalet Yud. I appeared to them with this name. Mi havaya leinedati lahem. But the name Yod Kei Vav Kei, I did not let them know. I did not show to them." And the traditional commentaries explain that what is Hashem saying over here? Hashem is saying, "Ani havaya. I am Hashem. I am Yod Kei Vav Kei. I am showing myself to you, Moshe Rabbeinu. You are getting such a high level of revelation from me. I am revealing to you this name of Yod Kei Vav Kei. But the Avos only had much lower levels of revelation, and they didn't complain about where they're standing. You who have such deep revelation, how are you questioning my ways?" So it's sort of like a rebuke from Hashem. "How are you questioning my ways, Moshe? I've revealed so much to you. Don't you know that there is more over here, that there's something more? Don't you know that everything I do is purposeful?" So that's the traditional commentary. But we're going to go a little bit deeper into this. What does it mean that God appeared to Avram and Yitzhak and Yaakov with the name Shin Dalet Yud and not with the name Yud Kei Vav Kei? Why didn't Hashem appear to the Avos as well? They were such lofty souls. It says that the Avos were like a Merkava to Hashem. They were like God's chariot, meaning that they were like vessels for God. They had no independent selves, no independent existence. So how come they're not achieving this higher level of revelation of Yud Kei Vav Kei? And so to answer this, we're going to talk a little bit about the rhythms of life. The way Hashem created the world is with a very rhythmic pattern. Everything is a constant ebb and flow. We see even just with our human life, we have the inhale and the exhale. That's that, the rhythm of our breath, which is keeping us alive. We go to sleep at night so that we have energy to be awake the next morning. We have this time of winter when the world sort of goes into a state of hibernation in order for things to blossom again in the spring and summer. So the world is constantly in the state of going inward, moving inward into a state of what we might call concealment, into a state of darkness. Sleep is a time of darkness. Our minds are not awake. Our minds are not aware. And then we have the rhythm of revelation, of daytime, of summer, of growth, of awareness. And that is the flow that is constantly happening in our lives. We see this with relationships as well, that in relationships, we have different seasons. We have seasons of times that we feel very close to another person, where we feel like things are flowing with the other person, where sometimes we feel like heightened emotions and everything is just so strong and so much in the forefront of our awareness. And then there are times when things maybe become like a little bit more grounded, where you're sort of more in regular life and that relationship is sort of playing out within regular life, but it is expressing itself in a more hidden way because other things are maybe taking the front wheel. And the process of how you're incorporating the relationship, even into those darker, less expressive times, is going to be very indicative of the relationship. And the revelation and the closeness that comes after those seasons of a little bit of distance is often also a reflection of what happened during those seasons of distance. Are you able to maintain during the seasons of distance and disconnect? Or does the relationship completely fall apart in those seasons of distance and disconnect? The ebb and flow that we experience in our lives is there because God created the world with an ebb and flow as well. So the ebb and flow in our life, the ratzoy and shuv, the running and returning that we see constantly within our own lives, is a reflection of how Hashem created the world. Hashem created the world with this rhythm of running, revelation, and returning inward, concealment. And every revelation is preceded by a concealment. Before we can have revelation, there first needs to be the inward motion. And a mashal that is presented in Chassidus to express this idea is a teacher who is learning with a student. And they're deep in the idea, and they're enjoying sharing with each other, and the student especially is enjoying receiving from his teacher. His teacher is, you know, light and sharing and energy and revelation, and he's having this revelatory experience of receiving something so new and amazing. And all of a sudden, a new idea comes into the teacher's head. And this is a very common occurrence. I know I've experienced it personally often when teaching, is that as you're giving something over to somebody else and you need to explain it into their mind and so that they can grasp it, it really forces you to deeper into the idea yourself. And either as a result of the question the student asks or even just in your own process and figuring out how I'm going to make this fitting for the student, a new idea, a deeper understanding will come into your mind. You'll be able to achieve a much deeper understanding of the idea or a whole new understanding of the idea, often much more powerful than your initial understanding. So being that as human beings, we don't have space to hold more than one deep idea in our minds at a time. Smaller, more superficial things, we can flip back and forth between them. It's something that really involves concentration to grasp. We need to be focusing on it completely. So the teacher's in the middle of sharing one idea, and all of a sudden this new deeper idea comes into the teacher's mind. So there's a choice at this moment. Either the teacher can continue teaching and sort of let that idea go. And often these ideas, as they're very fleeting and as they're still just sort of in the back of our consciousness, you know, like the first like tingling of an idea, unless you really ground it and bring it down and draw deeply into your consciousness, it's going to be gone forever. You're going to lose it forever. So the teacher can either let it go back to where it came from, or the teacher can start processing this idea. Now, initially, as the teacher is processing the idea, they might still be able to continue talking. They might still be able to continue teaching. But as the idea really starts to come into their mind and they're really starting to concentrate on it, as we mentioned before, he's going to have to stop talking because you can't be focusing deeply on two things at once. And so the teacher is going to go silent. And the student who's just there sitting with their teacher is going to feel at first abandoned, is going to feel worried. Did I say something wrong? Did something happen? Why is there this distance now between my teacher and me? We were in such a good flow. We were in this like space of sharing. And why is the teacher going silent? And it looks like rejection. It looks like abandonment. It looks like concealment. And then the teacher is going deeper and deeper into the idea. And as he goes deeper and deeper into the idea, he sort of like leaves that space more and more. Obviously not physically, but we can see when someone is like leaving the space that they're in and they're somewhere else in their minds. And then the student notices that look on the teacher's face that they've got a new idea. And they realize with the light that is in the teacher's face that, oh, this is not abandonment. This is not him leaving me. This is not because I am not worthy. The teacher is just having a new idea. And soon, after he processes it, I can receive it as well. And that serves as a comfort for the student. That serves as a balm for the hurt that the student feels from the silence. And then after the teacher fully processes the idea, he's then going to share it with the student, and the student will now have a much deeper understanding than he could have potentially had previously. And this is what happens during times of galus. Hashem says, I only revealed to the Avos the name Shin Dalet Yud, the name Shakai. Shin Dalet Yud represents Hashem's light and energy as it enters into creation and limits itself to be found within creation. We even see within the name itself that there is the word Dai. Dai means enough. Enough is limitation. Within this world, we just need enough energy within every individual creation. Just enough to keep that thing animated. But it's not God's endless, boundless light. The name Yod-Heh-Vav-Keh represents God's infinite, boundless light as it can't even be contained within the world. It's much, much, much greater than the world itself. We see that Avram found Hashem himself through looking at the world, and he was able to find God through creation. But the God that he found, the energy that he found, the level of godliness that he encountered, was this level of Shin Dalet Yud, Hashem as he is limited within creation. And Hashem wants to share himself with his people. Hashem wants the Jewish people to be able to experience Yod-Keh-Vav-Keh. Hashem wants the Jewish people to be able to experience him in this boundless way, to get to know who he is truly for himself. And therefore, he has the Jewish people go into galus. Because like we said, before the teacher can share a new revelation, there are these moments of silence. There's the silence of downloading this new level of revelation into this world. And how do we download this much deeper level of revelation? How do we make it accessible? How does it become accessible to us? How is it that we can experience God on such a lofty level? The only way we can experience God on such a lofty level is if we reveal it from within ourselves, when we recognize that there is a part of Hashem within us, that this name Yod-Keh-Vav-Keh is actually here within me. And how do I reveal that Hashem is within me? That is only revealed during the darkness. Because when things are light, and when we're in a state of revelation, then it's very easy to rely on our more superficial levels of our relationship. And that's often what happens, that when we're not forced to dig deep within ourselves, when we're not forced to uncover our commitment to Hashem, we often ride on the more external relationship that we have. It's kind of like, you know, when you're dating someone and you're just starting to get to know them, and obviously you're seeing a very external version of themselves. That's just what dating is. It's a very external relationship. Because we're acting in a certain way, and even if we're sharing, everything comes along with a certain level of guardedness, which it should, because why should I reveal the depths of myself when there is no commitment? So in the stages of dating, I get to know someone, and I'm getting to know them, but I'm only getting to know a part of them and a way that they present themselves to the world, or they're showing up to present themselves to the other person. And then often this happens after marriage, or you're really getting to know the person for who they are, and it looks very, very different than the person that you were dating. And you're like, hey, is this the person I married? Like who is this person? I don't even know them. Because there's so many new levels that are going to be unraveled. And often that process comes with a little bit of a breaking. And it's a little bit tough. It's hard. We need to break the old perceptions that we had in order to uncover the deeper perceptions. And that's a painful process. It's not easy to just let go of our old perceptions, to shed both the person who is sharing themselves needs to shed their skin, and the person who is perceiving needs to shed the perception. And that shedding process is not easy. Letting go of these old perceptions is painful. Letting go of old identities is painful. It's not easy. But it's the only way to reach the essence. And going back to what we mentioned earlier, is that if the relationship can withstand darkness, and if the relationship can withstand conflict, and if the relationship can withstand pain, that proves the truth of the relationship. Because if we can only stay committed to each other when things are happy, but then as soon as things start to get a little bit hard, it just falls apart, that shows that the relationship is not true, because truth is constant. If something can be maintained through hard times and through easy times, that shows it is true, because it touches on the essence of who we are. And if it is essential, then it is constant. If it is essential, then it doesn't change. If it is essential, it can withstand anything. And I think we've all experienced conflict we've had with another person. And if it's someone that you really care about, we know that if you work through the conflict, you're going to come out on the other side with a stronger bond. Now, that doesn't mean that we go and seek out conflict. Of course, we would love to be able to achieve closeness without conflict. But it's very, very, very difficult to go to that deeper space without some sort of external catalyst that forces us to go there. It's very, very difficult to uncover these layers without going through a little bit of a period of darkness. Because that shedding is dark. And after the conflict happens, we can revel in the new, beautiful, deeper relationship that comes out of the other side. And similarly with our relationship with Hashem, that when the Jewish people were in Mitzrayim, going through the pain of the Gullus, going through the hardship, and still holding on, grasping on just to a little thread of our connection with Hashem, revealed the essence of our souls, revealed the Yodkei Vavkei within ourselves. And in that way, Hashem was then able to share Yodkei Vavkei with us in a way that the Avos were not able to experience. The Gullus enabled us to receive, to download the next level of revelation, which was so much greater than the revelation that they had previously. And the same thing is happening now, during the Gullus that we're in now. And can you imagine, being that this Gullus is so long, how intense the download is going to be? How intense, like, the new download is? Like, what massive, incredible revelation is going to come, that this download has been such a long process? And it's true that the revelation we're going to experience when Mashiach comes is like literally, it's uncomparable to anything that has ever been experienced before in this world. We're going to be experiencing God in a way that was never experienced before. And of course, on our end right now, and this is how we should feel, we feel like, okay, God, enough downloading. We're ready. I think that it's time that we can receive this revelation, and we want to receive this revelation. But that this gullus that we're in right now, it's not purposeless. It's not purposeless. We're shedding our old skin. And we're shedding our old understanding of what Hashem is. We're shedding the immature understanding of what God is. And we're coming to a space where we're going to experience something so far beyond what we can even imagine. And the same way this is occurring within the world on a macro level, every year we also are going through this process on a micro level. On Shavua Asar B'Tammuz, the walls of Yerushalayim were breached, but many years before that, Moshe broke the Luchos when he came down from Har Sinai and he saw the Jewish people engaged in the golden calf. And the breaking of the Luchos seemed like a massive concealment. It was a terrible thing. But after Moshe broke the first set of Luchos, we went through the process of Teshuvah, and then we received a second set of Luchos. And the second set of Luchos were much, much, much greater than the first Luchos. And we see this process playing out during this time. We start off with the 3 weeks where, you know, things are bad. We're in a state of gullus. We're sensing the darkness. The teacher is quiet. The teacher is withdrawn. But then we move into the 7 weeks of comfort, where we read seven haftarahs that are comforting the Jewish people. And the comfort is that we see on our teacher's face that something new is downloading. And it's this recognition, this gullus is a time for downloading geula, that the gullus is a time for downloading much, much, much greater revelation. And that brings us comfort. And through that, we're able to come to your Yom Kippur, to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Sukkot and Simchas Torah, where we receive the new light. We receive the new energy of the new Luchos, and that brings us immense joy like we've never experienced before. So as this is happening on a macro level in the world, that we're still in, maybe in the state of darkness right now, but every year we go through this process internally where our own Luchos are maybe broken, where we have this time of darkness, where we are sensing pain, but we're going to come soon to our own personal understanding. And we have to meditate on this fact that there is this ebb and flow. Meditate and see the ebb and flow in my own life so that I can then understand how it's happening within the world and allow that to bring me comfort during this time and then be able to renew my relationship with Hashem this coming Tishrei on a whole new level with this entirely greater download and receive something much greater than we've ever received before. And when we enter into this time period with this knowledge that this is not punishment, this is not God turning away because he doesn't care about us, this is not distance for the sake of distance. This is when the seeds of our new future are being planted and the seed disintegrates before it can bloom. And we're feeling this disintegration, but the blooming is coming.